This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your podcast book club. I am one of your hosts, Anna, and I am joined, as always, by my book besties, Kim and Christina.
Hello!
Hello!
All right, listeners.
We're here.
Yes, we are. We are here, and we are back with part two of our House of Flame and Shadows, Crescent City, CC3. By Sarah J. Maas. There's a lot of names this book goes by.
There is a lot.
Yes.
So consider this your spoiler warning for everything SJM has written. Hofast was broken up into three sections, so we're doing three parts. This is part two. But it is not a read-along. So we are going into part two with the knowledge of what happens in the end. So if you've not finished the book, go finish it, then come back and listen to part one, and then now part two.
Yes.
And yes, I think, you know, this is going to be a longer episode. Part two is is very dense. So buckle up, everybody.
So much happens in this part.
It really does. So listeners, besties, friends, I want to just let you know that we are going to be arriving at a certain destination for this episode, and it's going to be called Summarize City. And at this destination in Summarize City, you'll be joining us as we are going to need to summarize just some things, because it's very plot heavy, and you know we don't usually do that, but to get to the good stuff, you gotta summarize some stuff.
So yes, welcome to Summarize City.
Welcome to Summarize
City. I love that, Kim. That's so fun.
We hope you enjoy your stay.
Yes, we really hope you enjoy your stay here. It's gonna be fun. Oh, before we get started, let's do some Patreon shout outs.
Yes.
For our tier two book betches.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so tonight we're gonna be shouting out Ramya, Krista Vertain, Ashley Bergstaller, Sam, and Mariana Martinez.
Woo!
Hi.
Thank you guys so much for supporting us. Y'all are
the
best.
We love you. You're the best ever.
Thank you so much for joining our Patreon and supporting us. It really makes what we do possible.
Truly.
Exactly.
I think the best way to do this, do we want to do like a quick little summary of where we left off end of part one?
Sure. Yeah. So Bryce has left Prithian. We learned a lot of stuff. We're not going to rehash it because that's in part one of the episode.
Correct. Listen to the last
one. Also, I couldn't possibly do that again.
No.
So Bryce is left Prithian and she has Truth Teller and Star Sword, aka Gwydion, with her.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan is guilt ridden over killing Siggy and is going to do what Ethan does and fuck upwards.
Make a terrible decision.
And then Tharian has joined Declan and Flynn aboard some ship to go rescue Rune and meet the Hind, and we're going to get into all of that. Lydia is planning to help Rune and our Bat Boys, or not Bat Boys, Angel Boys, escape.
Uh-huh. Yeah, our Angel,
right.
Angel Boys.
Baxian and Hunt were given like synthetic healing stuff to speed up their wings healing, which...
To get their wings back.
Yeah.
Rune did not get that for his baby hand, but
it's
growing
at a glacial pace, but that's fine.
You know how that thrills us.
You know yes. how that thrills us.
Okay, so why don't we just jump into Hunt?
Yeah.
Okay. Hunt. Oh God, you guys. God, the way we start this off is just hysterical because it's just our least favorite thing in the world. Which is a visit from a magical being that tells you nothing. We love to see it. We'd love to see it.
Sarah loves this. She loves this.
She
it's like
loves it.
Elena.
Loves
and
it.
I will say, the surreal could tell me nothing all day, and I would live
right.
for it.
Right.
Like the way that right. the surreal just drops that T and is like,
yes.
figure it out.
There is a difference.
There is a difference.
Yes.
And because we're talking about this with the knowledge of what we find out later, it's even more annoying, I think, because in the moment you're like, it's like a tease. But now you're like, there's no tease. This is just doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Adis visits Hunt in the dungeons as a kitty cat. And Hunt's like, are you the real kitty cat? Are you the fake kitty cat? And he's like, it's really me. So to summarize this, basically Hunt tells Adis that like Regulus harvested some of his lightning and put it in a crystal. And Adis is like, oh yeah, he probably wants to use your lightning to resurrect the dead. Just like that's why they were hunting Sophie Renas lightning.
Which is also super interesting knowing what we know, because Adis is like, oh shit, that's why we made you, is that lightning. And that's all, like, literally that's
your purpose,
like, your whole thing. So please don't do that again. That really defeats the purpose.
Right.
If we had the full picture, Adis.
Right.
But also, what did you want Hunt to do?
He literally says, you mustn't do so, Athalar. Yeah. And he goes, too late. He harvested into a crystal.
Too late, dude.
What did you want him to do? He's chained up. Like,
do you remember when you said now is not the time? Now would be the time.
No.
He literally says, perhaps they've at last learned what your father bred you to be.
See?
And then he says, what the fuck does that mean? And Adis says, a tale for another time, Athalar.
No.
He says, a tale for now, Adis.
Hunt yes, is Hunt. Us.
These
we
cryptic mentions of my father, the Black Crown, secrets about my powers. And then he interrupts him and goes, means nothing if you do not get out of these dungeons. Then stop fucking popping out of the shadows and find a key.
Oh my God.
At least it's like Sarah's self-aware enough to be like,
right.
Everyone's pissed.
Everyone's going to be annoyed. Tee-hee-hee. Oh my God.
And she's loving it.
She loves it. Yes. She loves to do this.
And then it is sweet at the end. He's like, if you find her, if you see her again, tell her. And then Adis just goes, I know.
Oh, sweet hun.
Because it's very parallel to like Thea and him. I know we hate Thea, or like she's a bitch. But like Adis recognizes that
for
love.
Sure.
And he's like, don't worry, I'll tell her. Like, I love that they're princes of hell, but they're not assholes.
No, I love it.
Adis especially.
Adis is great.
I could read a whole book about them.
Me too. The dynamics there,
I would,
you know?
I love that. I mean, you never know. She said she's going to write some spinoff stuff. So like, who's to say?
What if we're all like, oh, it's going to be House of Many Waters and it's just like the princes of hell.
Oh my
hell.
God.
Everyone's like, what?
We never find out what happened to Therian and Sathya. It's just like, he should. That's it.
Nothing.
Who's Fury? I don't know.
We don't know. So we still don't. And we'll never know. Yeah.
So yeah, I think the next big thing is the cool rescue.
Yes.
Yes.
The
oh
big
my God,
rescue.
Guys.
Woo! My heart.
This, I need to, okay, listeners, we read this part. We had that, what is that thing called? That projector.
Projector.
Going. And it had a Bluetooth with it. And we had this amazing, what was it? Reading in Valeris?
Uh-huh. Instrumental.
Yes. Reading in Valeris, like instrumental music. And whatever song was playing, it was ended up being like our favorite song that played in that whole like little playlist. We would keep putting it on.
Yeah.
And that song was playing and there was like this crescendo and like.
And it was building and building. Oh.
Yeah, it was like violins.
And
it was
just.
And like, it's when Lydia is like running in her hind form. And then also when she then turns into human and she like jumps and the music like.
Oh.
Boom.
Y'all.
It was like a movie. It was a 4D experience.
It was like, there was simultaneously, it was all working together, but it was a lot. And I was just like, I've never been so immersed in a situation before in my entire life.
Also, all of us were reading in silence, but we were at the exact same part. And the music was like crazy. I think at some point, one of us was like, guys, this music is
It's so much. It's so crazy. It was so,
highly recommend for if anyone does a reread.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So basically, like, they decided that either back, the Asari and like Pollux and everybody, are like, someone's gotta die. And so they come in and unchain them and they like fall to the floor and they're like, all right, get up. And sweet Baxian is like, one step at a time, friends. And I
guys
love him so much.
That killed me because they had to go up the stairs and they were just all like, they couldn't do it because they have been dangling by their hands or stumps for days. And he's like, one step at a time. I think I was in Brothers at some point. Like, God damn it. If she has not gotten me to love Baxian,
I love
Baxian.
I love him. And they're like, Mordok is being a piece of shit and Pollux is being a piece of shit. And they're like taunting them. And I'm like, oh, I fucking hate you.
And then doesn't Lydia come in? Mm-hmm. Or no, they're taking them out. And she's like, she gets on the elevator with them.
Yeah, she kicks them out. She's like, be waiting on the bay upstairs. Bye. And they're like scared of her because she's a fucking badass.
Yeah.
So, oh, I'm sorry. The hawk is in there with them. That's why she shoots him. Okay.
Yeah.
And the hawk is like being a dick. And Hunt says, fuck you to him. And Lydia said mildly, I couldn't have said it better myself, Athalar. Hunt looked, but not fast enough. The hawk certainly didn't look fast enough. and Hunt knew he'd treasure this moment forever. The moment when Lydia Servos pulled out her gun and fired it right between the hawk's eyes.
Oh, it's so yes! good. It's so satisfying.
It's so good. I like it's so satisfying. Like, oh,
she's
my
just
God.
So like smooth about it. It's like and, sex. Let me tell you, the amount of times she like turned me on in this book.
Oh, so hot.
Insane.
I think all three of us were like, Rune, get on your knees and worship this woman or we will. Like, truly. Like, we are obsessed with her.
Immediately.
Please. Yes.
Also, I love that, like, this happens, like, bodies hit the floor, all these things. And then Baxian just goes, what the fuck? Like, he still thinks she's the high.
I forgot he didn't know. I was like, what do you mean? Like, Baxian's in my mind. Like,
I'm sorry. What is happening?
Come again? Like, what are we doing?
Like, Hunt knows, Rune knows.
Right, but he doesn't know.
And he's, like, worked with her for so many years. Like, this is, like, shocking information.
It is quite literally brand new information.
Brand new information. Absolutely.
But they get on this, like, little Jeep thing. Uh-huh. And Baxian takes, like, the machine gun. And he's, like, firing. And they're, you know, riding. And this whole part with, like, it's so amazing. It's like a movie. I'm telling you guys, it was a 4D experience we had.
Oh, my God, y'all. The scene between Declan with the boys. And with the boys. You know how that gets us. You know. We were all, like, I was, like, I'm going to sob. So Lydia's, like, back scene, gunner, everybody else in. She's in. Like, they're in a parking garage, which, like.
She's also already carried Rune on her back.
Are they in a parking garage?
I think, yeah they're in a parking garage.
Do you know, like, I had no idea. I literally thought, I don't even want to, I thought I was thinking Jurassic Park. For some reason, I was like,
they were in a forest?
That was just like, we're in a forest. Okay, like, I don't know why. Cool. I think I was.
They get to a forest later. Or like.
I know. And so in my mind, the whole thing is a forest.
But no, it's a parking garage.
That's hysterical.
They're going round.
So Deck gets on and Deck is like.
But yeah, he's like, camera feeds are wonky. We lost track of you. And he just goes, all there? And she goes, all there. And then he just goes, thank fuck, Deck said. And Rune choked on a sob. Like, the, oh, God.
And then, like, you hear, like, Lydia, all of the rebels that she's lined up. And it's like, Daybright, we're a go at Meridian, at Alcine, at Ravelis. And then she just, like, and then the, like, when she says, blast it to hell, Irithis, to the queen of the sprites.
Yes. Incredible.
Just consider it done.
Incredible.
I think we were
the best moment.
Truly unwell.
Yeah. This, like, whole buildup that she did, I loved this. I loved how she built it and, like, got us here and kind of didn't really tell us the plan, so we lived it as we were reading it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So intense.
It was so cool.
And then, like, when she... So when they finally... So that whole moment is, like, beautiful, and then they have to, like, separate, right? And she's like, I have to get them off our tails. Like, Baxian and Hunt, you take Rune, you can fly. And so they're like, we can take you too. And she's like, no, I need to buy you time. Like, let me do this.
Guys.
Why do I want to cry again? I hate this.
Because it's amazing. And I love Lydia. She literally, like, she's the MVP. If you hate her, like, I don't know what to tell
leave.
You. Like, I don't
leave.
Know. She's
leave.
Amazing.
Just leave.
This woman has been through it, okay? And she's like, leave me. And Baxian and Hunt take off, like, a few things happen, but, like, Rune is beside himself because, hello, they're mates, you find out later. And he's like, put me down, put
go
me
back
down,
for her,
like,
go back for
go
her.
Go back for her.
Oh,
and
wait,
you're
wait.
Just like...
Yeah, I'm sorry, before that happens, she is a deer, and she goes up and nuzzles his neck in her deer
my
form.
God.
Guys.
And something about the deer
nuzzling
just really got me.
It's so tender.
Also,
it's
she's a
so
doe,
precious.
And Hunt, like, they hadn't seen her as her doe before, and they're like just literally holding, like, dangling Rune, like he's just sack of potatoes. And they're like, she just goes up and she, like, just prances up. She's so pretty.
She's
and she just, like, puts her. She nuzzles him, and then when she goes away, he, like,
touches.
He, like, touches where she had just nuzzled.
It's so sweet,
y'all. This woman,
this whole part,
stressful as...
Oh my God, it was so stressful. So this is really when the music crescendo
This was the crescendo that Anna was talking about. So okay, Anna, you're going to read it, but I need everybody to come with me here. Picture in your mind, violin music. It's hitting a crescendo. It's coming to the peak. Anna, go.
Okay, so it's like three pages of her running, basically. And she sees, like, her dreadwolves that she says, like, her dreadwolves, her soldiers, the deepest snarl unnervingly close behind was Mordak. And then there's, like, a couple more pages. She shifts back into her human form because she can't maneuver up the, like, cliff in her doe form, and so she gets into her humanoid shifter form. And then, like, guys, okay, this part, Mordak and the dreadwolves are, like, on her tail. Then she broke into a run, faster than she'd ever sprinted in this human form, hurtling toward the cliff edge. Two bullets landed at her heels, and she veered to the side, easily dodging the third. She taught these dreadwolves everything they knew. She used it against them now. "Shoot that bitch!" Mordok screamed at his snipers. Lydia's life diluted into each step, each pump of her arms, bullets sprayed, rock and shrapnel at her feet. Only a few more steps, and Mordok is like screaming, end her, like over and over. But the cliff edge was there, and then she was over it. Lydia sobbed as she leapt, as the open air embraced her, as the rocks and surf spread below. For a heartbeat, she thought the water might be rising to meet her, but that was her, falling. A gunshot cracked like a thunderhead breaking. Pain ruptured through her chest, bone shattering, red washing over her vision. Lydia let out a choked, bloody laugh, and she died.
Guys!
When I tell you we read that and we all went... Like, nobody could make eye contact until we all knew we were done. We all just were like...
Like, no, 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 no.
I think I got up and left the room. I said, no, absolutely
like,
not.
You were like, I.
Yeah, because also Rune, they've gotten to the Depth Charger, and he's like, Therion, go do something. Go help her.
Like, go help
and
her.
And because they can see her on the cliff, and, like, all she can do is jump, and they see the rocks. And so then he's like, go help her. And I, in that moment, I was like, what do you want him to do? Like, he's a mermaid. Like, what do you want him to do?
I was thinking, like, I literally was thinking when he was saying that. I was like, so is he just maybe he'll, like, dolphin?
That's what I was like, is he going to jump
and,
out
like,
and
catch her?
Yeah. Like, is that what you want from
I think she also has a bullet in her chest, so.
Yeah. But I think what he did is actually rise that water up. Like, the water, like, caught her a little earlier.
Oh, okay. Got yeah. it. Got it. Got it. Got
like,
it.
It would have been the full impact.
Yeah.
That, it was just so beautiful. It was just, like, we.
That was one of was the, amazing. Like, best parts. Like, best, most stressful, but, like, so well written.
Honestly, I would say, like, a top stressful moment in any SJM book. Any SJM book.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, it was really, really well done. And she does a great job of making you fall for a character, like, love a character so dearly. With really, we only had, this is chapter 35, we've only had her for a handful of chapters, really.
That's true.
Her POV.
That's yeah, true. Totally.
And you just fall for her.
Right.
Because she's just so... She's so vulnerable.
She's wonderful.
Okay, so I think let's pause here on their journey.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Bebop over to Ethan's journey. So this is one that we're going to like summarize maybe just him this in the whole part. Like everything that happens with Ethan, we're going to talk about it right now and just like do it as a whole.
Yeah, Ethan has some more important parts in part three.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Okay, so long story short, Ethan gets off that damn boat and they're like, what the fuck, Hallstrom? And he's like, gotta go back to Lunathian. And he goes straight to the House of Flame and Shadow. So like... Interesting choice, but fine, because we got ourselves to enter the House of Flame and Shadow, and I'm gonna tell you guys, it was really given, like, really Listen, classy speakeasy vibes. I was, yeah, like...
If I had to pick a house, sign me up.
So he meets up with Jessaba. Jessaba's like, what are you doing here? And she then, I guess, like, takes him on as her, like, I'll take this project. and you will also then be my assistant.
Okay, so we learned that Jessaba was a human.
Yes.
And she worked, she was a priestess. She was, like, part of one of the, like, librarians, for lack of a better word, for the Library of Parthos. And, like, protecting the books. And when the Asteri came and all that stuff happened that we learned about in our history lesson with Princess Leia hologram, in part one, that, like, the humans were being, it's not a lie that, like, the Asteri were, like, destroying all the books and whatever. And so Jessaba... was in charge of trying to, like, save the books in the library, which is what she's still doing to this day, protecting them, and she put them on a boat.
There were, like, a few boats, and a few of them got, like, sunk, and one got through.
One got through, and she was on that one, and basically what happened is, like, Apollyon showed up and was like, yo, what's up with all these books? And he's like, you know, why are they so important? It's like Apollyon could, like, the thought, like, he thought they were actually some, like, weapon.
Right.
And yeah. She's like, no, they're literally just books with knowledge. But apparently that was enough to scare Apollyon. So Apollyon basically cursed her with long life and was like, you will never age. You will just, until you can tell me what these books do, you will never die. You are just stuck in this body.
Yeah.
Which is like an odd curse to have.
It's so funny. It's like, it's such an interesting thing to do for by on Apollyon's thing. It's almost like it just as this eternal being, he was like, this will be a fun, silly game. Like he was like,
yeah.
I'm almost, it's like, how, at what point is she going to get sick of being alive? And I'm just curious at what point that'll outweigh her protecting of these books.
It's like a really like, long game
you know,
of chicken.
So like how, when's that going to happen? Instead of just being like, okay, well, I smite you with my hellfire. Bye. I want to read the books. Like, you know,
right.
And so it was this, and also the fact that she's like, my big major curse is that, like, I'm young. and I
and beautiful and will forever. Always
be young and beautiful. And at and some I'll point, she age. Like lets her like you know age go, and she's just like younger with like longer hair
uh-huh.
and like and walking around. Yes, like, it's
part
really
of her magic is that like she like makes herself look older than she than the age that she was when she changed, so that people take her seriously. I guess
right, yeah. The only other thing that we learn, I don't know, I can't remember if it was in this conversation, but it doesn't really matter, is that, like, Apollyon, when he cursed her, he touched her with his magic, and it, like, some of it transferred to her. So she does have, like, magic, but it's...
She says, I didn't think he intended it, but when his magic touched me, something transferred over. It took me a while to realize I had powers beyond the stasis of eternal youth. Unfortunately, I've had 15,000 years to master them.
And so, but she doesn't say specifically what her magic is.
No.
Okay,
no.
Interesting.
But she does say she puts spells. She uses some of her magic to put spells on the books because the volumes took on lives of their own. They became aware. Mm. And by the time I tried to unweave the spells of life on them, their existence had become too permanent to undo.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan says, well, why don't you just like get rid of them? And she says, because my spells are written in there. I'm not letting that knowledge loose in the world.
Which is interesting. And then he's like, do you want to start aging again? And she says, not yet, not until it's time. And he says, for what? And she said, for a world to emerge where these books will be truly safe at last.
Which is like, which I guess really is sad foreshadowing. Yeah.
I think she's
the
tired. Asteria
are gone. And she's like, oh, this is good then. Bryce will take over and protect the books.
But also, what about all the animals? What's happening to them and who are they? And
in
what are
my
we doing
headcanon,
them?
they went to Bryce and Hunt in their like library. Like they like took over all the stuff. And in oh, that, they also okay. got the animals.
The animals.
I just have so many questions about those animals.
Didn't want to free them. Like the spell couldn't just be like, oh, and you away you
I,
go.
I like to think that they're bad people.
Well, sure. I just am like, if I were Bryce and Hunt, I'd be like, I don't really want to take care of these animals.
I don't want to like, this is a lot of like cleaning cages.
It's like a
and,
zoo.
Like, eating.
And
yeah.
I don't
like, it's
really
like a zoo.
Want to deal with that.
Yeah.
I just don't
and
want
like,
a petting zoo.
Yeah. This isn't, we don't have time.
Okay.
Anyway.
So the other big thing that happens is the astronomer shows up because he wants like payment for Siggy. And Jessica's like, fine, I'll pay you off. And then Hypaxia shows up and she's been kicked out of the House of Earth and Blood, right? Or she's been kicked out. Well, she's been kicked out of the, she's no longer queen of the witches.
And not only are they like, you're not queen. They're like, we're also going to murder you.
Yeah. There's a bounty on her head.
So she has to defect to the House in Flame and Shadow.
Yes. Yes. And Jessica's like, also great because I need you to be a necromancer.
Yeah. Right.
I need you to like sew her head back on.
Yeah.
And then bring her back because Ethan here can't move on and do anything worthwhile until we just do this.
And I really need him to pack some boxes for me. So.
And he won't stop whining. So please, for the love of God, get in here and do this.
Do
but
it.
Then we find out Hypaxia is, turns out, not a great necromancer.
Dude.
Turns out, didn't really work out because Siggy does come back, but she came back as a reaper. Pretty much, like, the way it works is a necromancer, like, brings you back and is like, okay, let's go to this door. And Siggy was like, no shunt, I'm going to go to this door. And that door is a reaper door.
I'm a vindictive bitch.
Yeah, and she went through that one instead. And Ethan then sees this and is like, himself, and so dramatic, and just starts himself. Screaming, fix her at everyone. He's like, fix her, all caps, like, fix
dude,
her. And they're like, we tried to fix her, and this is what happened. And so then the genius idea that comes from this is like, you know how we can fix her, guys? I got it. You know what we gotta do? We're gonna find Sophie's body, and then we're gonna necromance Sophie so that Sophie can use her Thunderbird lightning to bring Siggy back to that doorway so that we can give her, quote, the chance to make the choice again.
Why?
Like, truly? Kay.
Why?
Like, that's like, all just to give Siggy the chance
like,
to choose
happening?
A different door. When, like, she popped up as Necromancer and was like, I am gonna kill you. Like, I'm
as a reaper, yeah.
Mad.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think if we put her back there, she's gonna pick door number one.
I don't
like,
think
I don't
she
think
is.
That's gonna
I think
happen.
She's made it pretty clear. I think she's pretty
clear. But you know what? Also, she was dead. This is like, it's like, we just don't, sometimes people just need to go to sleep.
Like, just let them die.
Yeah. Like, let them die.
Why are we bringing everybody back? Like, I just.
Yeah.
Like,
Ethan.
And then, yeah. Ethan. So, also then to go get Sophie, it's like, all right. So, and I understand.
Exactly.
We had, yeah.
Okay. He's like, well, I made a bad decision, so let's dial this
up. Let's go deeper into this bad decision.
If this wasn't a disaster enough.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
Again. Twice.
With somebody else.
Uh-huh.
Take
and
two.
Do that again with somebody else.
Uh-huh.
Cool. Okay. So, but, and Jessica's like, give me 30 minutes, I'll find out where her body is. Leaves the room. comes back and she's like, it's on Evelyn. And they're like, all right, let's
fancy
go.
That.
So, hey, Kawinky Dinks, that's where everybody else is.
Thing.
Okay.
It's on Evelyn. Why? No reason.
But first, before they do go to Evelyn, there's a really awful, horrific section of this book where the Asteri, in retribution for the spine attack.
Yeah.
And as a, like, direct fuck you to Bryce, send Omega boats into the Istrus and then fire these, like, brimstone missiles, like, straight in to Asphodel Meadows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, guys, this part was so rough to read.
Yeah.
It
was really bad.
Understand that why we needed it.
Yeah, we needed it for the plot. I get it.
Yeah, and why it needed to be, like, the graphic sadness of it. Mm-hmm. But it was, yeah.
It felt like rough. A parallel. Like, obviously, this is personal, right? It's supposed to hit Bryce where it hurts. Because exactly. At the end of CC1, it, listeners, if you forgot, when the demons come through, it's right by Asphodel Meadows and, like, Asphodel Meadows. And the humans and the, like, children and everybody, they don't have anything to protect themselves. And the veneer refuse to go help, except Bryce runs there, and that's when, like, Ethan at the end of CC1 comes and helps her. So, like, it's a very special, like, it's a targeted attack to, like, hurt Bryce.
Well, and she's part human,
right?
Yeah, and she's half human. But it felt very, like, it was like a great parallel to Aelin in Heir of Fire when the king gives the command to wipe out one of the salt slave mines.
Yeah.
Is it Endovir that he wipes out, or whichever one it is?
It's like Calcutta. Yeah,
it's either that one or the one in Eelway. Yes. And so when he does, it was a good parallel to, like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Agreed. Just could have again done without the explicit mention of the children's bodies. I just don't love it. Call me weirdo. Just don't love it.
There's, like, a girl in, like, a uniform, like, a teenage girl in a uniform, and, like, Ethan's trying to, like, help her, and she just looks at him and says, why? And he, like, can't answer. And, like, it's really rough.
Awful.
So, yeah. Hate so it. They're helping, but they do help everybody there before leaving for Evelyn, and that's, like, where we leave them at the end of part two. Like, that's, like, the last thing that happens with Ethan in part two.
Yeah.
So now we're going to rewind back in the book.
Right.
We're going all the way back.
All the way back to see Bryce.
Yeah.
Bryce left Prithian under not great terms and is winnowing, basically, to the Autumn King's office.
Through the crater. Yeah.
So she lands in his office and, you know, we're going to summarize this because, quite frankly, the only reason that she really goes here is to get information about the Star Sword and Truth Teller and kind of that prophecy. And then also, coincidentally, not coincidentally, the Autumn King has something called a prism, which, yay, I get to do a science lesson, guys. Is everyone excited? I'm going to talk about science.
Science with Kim.
This is a new series. No, it's not. We're never going to do it again. But, like, basically, they're, like, playing this really annoying game of 21 questions. It's super annoying.
Exhausting.
So, because she wants to find out about Rune and Baxine and Hunt, and he's like, well, I'll tell you what I know if you tell me what you know. But instead of just talking to each other like adults, they have to do this game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she tells him about the Asteri and how they, you know, they poison the water and blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, she's like, oh, what's that thing? What is this thing? I don't know what this is. And he's like, oh, it's a prism. And she's like, tell me more. And he says, this device retracts the light, pulling it apart so I might study every facet of it. That device gathers it back into one beam again. And so it's like it pulls the light apart. And then when it brings it back together, that light becomes more powerful.
Mm-hmm. Okay? It's two of them, right? Like one pulls it apart and then it shines into the other one and that one pulls
There's
it
There's two ends of the prism. And like one is light and one is darker. And so it's like when you bring light and dark together,
I like science, sci-fi stuff, and there's quite a bit of it in this book, but I felt like this was hard to follow.
Yeah, welcome to my world. Nope.
I kept picturing a cube, like one cube here and one cube here that was clear, like a prism.
Right.
Yeah, cube. That makes sense. Let's
That sounds great.
I probably could be very wrong. But that's what I pictured in my brain.
That sounds great.
This was harder to me than the black hole, honestly. I didn't even try.
Same. The black hole was easier.
We do get some non-science information, though. And basically, this is part of the reason why she came. It doesn't matter. They get into this conversation and he says, the Star Sword is made, as you called it. The knife, Truth Teller, can unmake things. Made and unmade, matter and antimatter. With the right influx of power, they can be merged. and they can create a place where no life, no light exists. A place that is nothing. Nowhere. And
black hole.
Black hole. So this is where Bryce gets the idea for the black hole. I'm not going to point out the irony of a place that is nothing, nowhere, which is the opposite of nothing, which is somewhere, but that's fine. Not going to get into it. And she says, that's not possible. And he says, it is. I read about it in the Avalon archives centuries ago. So now we're getting, she's learned how to potentially double her light. She's learned that the Star Sword and Truth Teller together can create a black hole. And then also that she can go learn more in the Avalon archives.
All roads point to Avalon.
All roads point to Avalon. And so the next, so like another couple POVs happen. And so this is when all the boys get together on like the depth charger, right?
Right.
And so Bryce is like, I've had enough of this 21 questions game, Dad.
We have to.
She basically shows, comes, rolls into his office and is like, so I actually came on purpose.
Surprise.
And I've actually just been like pulling information from you and like, oh, you thought I was dumb. And then I just showed up here on accident. Oh, that's so cute. No.
Yeah.
So he gets pissed. She chains him in a closet with a bucket.
I love this. Like the,
oh, I love it.
Loved between it. The vacuuming and like the broom closet that she locks her. I just love it.
So she shuts him in.
Yeah.
He says, I will kill you and your bitch mother for this. And she goes, I'll pencil you in for tomorrow, and slams the door.
Bye.
So I think up until this section with the Autumn King, we were all still, correct me if I'm wrong, like debating whether or not he was going to be a morally gray character or a villain. Like we really thought there was a chance he was going to be more morally gray. And like, I don't know if that's because I was a dummy or if there were clues there that we just were reading too much into. But it felt like we were like given little clues of him being maybe not like fully evil.
I don't think we're crazy. No, I don't think we're crazy. We talk about it in when I did my reread of CC2. Like when Bryce confronts the Autumn King in the Fae archives, she's like, you know, why wouldn't I be scared of you? You killed the last Starborn prince. And, you know, because you were jealous of his power. And he laughs. And the way that he laughs and the way it's written, he goes, you know nothing of the truth. He says something like, you don't know the truth. And the way it's written makes you think, oh, okay, there was a different motive.
Right.
And there's a couple of those instances where you think.
Well, even in here.
Like his methods might be bad and wrong. But I was thinking that in the end, we would get some sort of like, not necessarily a redemption, but something, he would have been useful. And instead, we like, which we'll get to, is like the caves later, and he's just he's just evil.
Well, and it's like, I skipped over it because it ends up not mattering because he dies. But like, him and Bryce have this whole really kind of like vulnerable conversation where he is like clearly jealous of like Randall and her mother, and she's like, "I'm sorry, are you being like a jealous dad right now?" And he was like, well, Randall got to raise you and you call him your dad. And she was like, I didn't think you cared. And he was like, I never said that, basically. And she was like, okay, well, you know, be a decent person. And like, we'll talk about, you know, bonding. And then literally like when you get back to Bryce for the ninth time in this part, he like is basically threatening to like sell her out to the Asteri if he doesn't.
Yeah, she's like, I'm gonna kill that kid Emil, and like he's just like, what? Okay, so pick a lane.
This whiplash back and forth. I don't think we're insane. Like I think I think we're guilty of like reading into some theories too much, but that's also fun, right? Like we're here theorizing. That's what we do on our podcast. Blah blah blah.
Of course.
But I also think that like we have read a ton of books like this, and we pick up on little nuances of characters, and that's what makes them interesting, right?
Right.
And I guess I don't think we were crazy. I think there was like,
no.
I mean, I don't know. We know she had a first draft that she completely trashed and rewrote it or re-edited it. I don't know.
I honestly wish I didn't know that because the amount of times I have to stop myself from thinking about if something was different in that first draft is like so bad for me mentally.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And I just felt like this was a good example. We talked about this in part one, but like a lot of storylines, it just like kind of went nowhere and like nothing came of it. And like these interactions that characters would have, and then it literally went nowhere and meant nothing because like, this whole situation with him went nowhere. She ends up killing him. So it's like, what?
Yeah.
I don't. And there wasn't like this moment between them at the end that was like,
right,
you know, at all tender or vulnerable or anything. No. It was just like, he sucked.
Right. And like, I didn't need that. I'm really happy with his death. Like, we'll talk about it in a minute. But it was just like, it felt a little like she was almost leaving it open-ended to decide whether or not he was going to, like, actually be evil or not. And then was like, no, he's evil.
No, I'm putting that nail in the coffin. Like,
He was always evil because of what he did to Rune. Like, yes. Yeah. Like, it's not like I thought he was ever going to be able to be redeemed from that. I just thought that we were going to do something more morally gray there.
Mm-hmm. So, basically, right before she leaves, Daddy's in the closet, and she goes up to the prism, and she sends
science
twin beams of light arcing around the prisms. Twin bursts of that light flared from either prism. Oh, okay, there's two. Gunning for each other. Bands of light falling into darkness, her power stripped to its most elemental basic form. They shot for each other, and where they met, light and darkness and light slamming into each other. Bryce stepped into the explosion in the heart of it, stepped into her power. She's leveling up, basically. Such light and darkness, the power lay in the meeting of the two of them. She understood it now, how the darkness shaped the light.
I don't.
But all that colliding power, it was the boost she needed.
So this is second level up. Boop, boop.
This is the second level up.
Yeah. Okay. I don't understand how she, like, powered herself up, essentially, with her own magic, when she, like, seems to not be able to hold on to it. Like, I don't understand how the prisms work. I understand how a prism works in essence. Like, if you have a prism, you shine a light through it, usually rainbows scatter, right? Like, light can bend. Like, I get that. I understand that basic science of a prism. I don't understand why her magic charges up within the prism.
Yeah.
Like, if there was, like, a magic crystal in the prism, fine. Like, that is my heavenly fire I needed.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't tell you. Could not tell
okay.
you.
Okay. All right. So let's go back to the depth charger.
Oh, this is it, guys. Oh, this is it.
Okay.
Thank God Lydia survived.
Thank God.
Getting to this part with Rune sitting by her bedside table. God. Like, holding vigil, not moving. Declan and Finn just, like, I'm picturing, like, a movie where it's, like, time keeps, like, passing and, like, everyone keeps coming in to check on him, and he's like, no, I'm not leaving her.
Yeah. At some point, Flynn says, Rune, buddy, you gotta sleep. If she gets up, I'll call you. If she even moves, I'll call you. And then Rune just stares at her, and then he's like, Rune? And he just says, the last thing I said to her, Rune whispered, was that she was dead to me. Flynn blew out of breath. I'm sure she knew you didn't mean it. I did mean it. His friend swallowed. I didn't realize things between you guys had become so intense. And then Rune just says, she did all this to save me anyway. Yes, she did.
That's right, Rune.
She
I
sure
love that little
did.
Nugget of self-awareness, though, that he's like,
me too.
I did mean it, and I need to tell her how sorry.
Yeah.
Like, how much, like, you can hear it in his voice and the way it's written that he just feels.
It says the guilt of it would eat him alive. She'd been done horrible things as the Hind, both before and after becoming Daybright, things he couldn't forget, yet his head was spinning with it, the rage and guilt. And then Flynn just says, go sleep, Rune. I've got your girl.
Oh! And that, like, is when just.
It's like.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
When she finally wakes up, this moment, this line, like, he wakes up, they look at each other, she's, like, blinking at him, and she's like, am I dead or alive? And his chest caves in. He's like, you're alive. And then, like, her lips kind of, like, curl faintly with, like, a slight smile. And then he, in his inner monologue, he's like, how could he feel such relief about someone he hated so much? How could he hate someone whose life mattered more to him than his own?
God damn it.
And it's like this, like, tug of war with, like, reconciling, like, who she was. And we get, there's a great conversation later, but
it's so
just,
good.
I love it.
This whole part.
I love that.
Oh, but guys, this.
Oh, Kim, you do this.
You do it.
This moment. Was this when I went to fell to the this, floor? Was this when I. Okay,
this
I think
is when you
was.
Fall
okay.
to the floor and I.
Yeah,
I,
not
I have never.
Yeah.
Okay. So she wakes up and, like, fully realizes where she is. She realizes that she's on the depth charger. And she gets up and rips everything off of her body because she's, like, very much still healing, like, not well. She starts sprinting through this ship, and she knows instinctively where to go. And she's running upstairs. Rune's, like, running after her, and she's running and she's racing, and she gets to where the school is, and she starts running past the doorways. And it's like, year three, year seven, year five. She skidded to a halt, gripping a door jamb. Rune reached her side as she shoved her face up to the glass. Year nine. A group of teenagers, most of them Myrrh, with striped skin and various clothing, sat in rows of desks in the classroom. Lydia pressed a hand against the door. Tears rolled down her cheeks. And then a boy, golden-haired and blue-eyed, looked away from his teacher and toward the window. The ground slid out from under Rune. The boy had Lydia's face, her coloring. Another boy to his left had dark hair and golden eyes, Lydia's eyes. Behind them, Flynn grunted with surprise. "You've got brothers on this ship?" "They're not my brothers," Lydia whispered, her fingers curled on the glass. "They're my sons."
Oh my God.
We are unwell, are you doing just from that? Like,
I'm sorry. What?
This reveal. This was the, my favorite reveal of the whole book.
Same.
It was so beautiful. Crazy.
Oh my God. It was, I just fell to the floor. And then I had to, like, when we talked about it in chapter test, I think I again had to get up, go take a lap.
We've already, at this point, she's made us fall in love with Lydia. Mm-hmm. And then this.
Yeah. And then, okay, so she, like, you know, she wants to see them, and the school director is like, "Lydia, we need to do this, you know, after school. It's too disruptive," which, like, they've already seen her. "Do you think they're just gonna go to the gym?"
He was like, "There's 5 hours of school left." And I was like, "Do you think these kids are gonna be able to sit there and learn fucking algebra right now? They're looking out the window. It's everyone's just looking at them, and they're looking at their biological mother, and they're just like, okay, let's sit down. Now, where were we in the history of the, like, are you
I'd be like, excuse me.
I'd be like, no, we're not getting anything done. Let's wrap
calling
this up.
Calling my dad. I gotta go.
Yeah.
I gotta go.
I mean, it was just.
So they come back and they have a meeting, and she gets to sit down with Bran, and we're going to call him Ace because I can't say his other name.
Same.
Bran and Ace, and I think both of the dads are there. Mm-hmm. And she's like saying hi to them. And she notes that Bran has, like, wildfire in him. Like, his spirit is wildfire.
So she's saying Ace has the thoughtful, quiet stone to Bran's wildfire.
I was like, oh my God. Brandon of the wildfire.
Brandon of the wildfire. Brandon of the wildfire.
The wildfire.
We lost our freaking mind.
And this wasn't even, like, the reveal of it.
Right, but we were like,
we were losing
it. I mean, we were like, I mean, you give us an inch, we'll take 16 miles. Like, we were like, that's it. Confirmation.
Confirmation.
Descended from Aelin. We knew it.
She is his descendant of Aelin.
The ruby. We were wild, y'all. Okay.
Oh, but y'all, okay. Can I just say,
oh, God,
that as someone who is adopted, Ace was not being very kind. And I did not appreciate that he, I understand it. We all process things differently. My journey is different than everybody else's journey. But I did not like that he was like, she's not our mom, sir. This woman has gone through literal hell and back, and I understand that you're upset, but we don't need to be saying mean things like that to her. She's probably like,
right.
It was such a gut punch.
Especially because you do know Lydia was with them until they were 18 months old, mm-hmm. and she was forced to basically leave them.
It was not her choice. Like, she did not really have a choice. And I just, maybe other adopted kids don't feel this way, but in my world, like, that was the worst. That was something that I never said to my adopted parents, because that was, like, the ultimate, ultimate blow, was, like, to say that, like, they weren't my parents just because they didn't give birth to me. And so this is kind of, like, the flip side of that.
Yeah.
And I just was like, that's very triggering, and I don't appreciate that. And I understand he's a shit little teenager, but I was like, I'm just so protective of Lydia, and for him to say that to her, I get it. He feels abandoned. He feels like, why didn't she want me? What was I good, not good enough for her? Like, all those thoughts everyone thinks.
Yeah.
But it's like, let me just tell you how wonderful this woman is, and you would not be speaking to her that way.
When she says the follow-up line, like, I think it's in the same section, and she says, she looks at them, and she says in her, like, inner monologue, they were her boys, her babies, for whom she had changed the course of her life, but they had been raised by these males. Ace and Bran were their sons, not by blood, but through love and care. They had protected them, raised them well. And then it goes on. She says out loud to her sons, I have no intention of taking you away from your parents. Her heart thundered, and she knew they could all hear it, but she raised her chin anyway. I don't know when my work will be over, if ever, but if it is, if I'm allowed to return here, I would like to see you again. She looked at the twins' parents, all of you.
Well, yeah, because before this, like, one of the dads looked at Lydia and, like, in hit, like, you could see that he was saying, like, please don't take my sons away from me.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The way that this scene gut punched me on both sides was just unfair. Right. It was like,
because you see, because of course, like as the parents who have raised them, yeah. like,
oh my god, and like those are their sons, like yeah, the fathers, like those are their yeah. sons.
Lydia like, says it, like she says, like they might not have birthed them, right. but they are their parents.
And so it was like for her to show up and like them to be so scared and be like, don't take my babies and my sons
like
away.
It just hit you like every which way.
I was gonna say it was like every way. Like he's like, she's not our mom, and I was yeah. like, oh god. And then Rinky having that fear in his eyes of like, oh my god, please don't take our babies away. I was like, oh my Sarah.
He's like, they were her boys, her babies. And I was just like, Sarah,
it's god, too much.
Damn it, stop it.
Like, I'm literally unwell on all ends.
Like,
I can't handle
it. I know. It was like, you just can't, but she does it. And I talked about this with Christina and Anna, but I personally, now everyone may not feel this way, I thought it was very well done. I thought it was very well handled and so respectful to all parties. The boys, their fathers, and Lydia. And I felt like it was just handled so incredibly well. And so I would like to think, it sounds like to me that she either knows somebody who's gone through adoption or has spoken to like close friends or right. something, because man, she really just gets you in the gut punch with these lines.
All angles.
It was so beautifully done. I mean, all three of us were crying reading it.
Right.
And to like tick it off, this age that you find out she gives them up is the same age as Christina's little boy.
Yep,
guys.
And Ace and Bran are twins. Kim and I both have twins.
Yep.
And it was just like a perfect storm of
it
like...
It was.
Exactly.
Which is just goes to like how incredible Sarah is as a writer, that she can pull these little pieces for each of us to be like, you may not relate to this entire situation, but there will be something that will just pull at your heartstrings and like make you feel yeah. oh y'all. But then she goes to the
this bitch. I was rooting for her after CC2. She seemed like a real cool chick.
Anna, you were like, guys, the Ocean Queen's real fluid. She's really cool. She's gonna be really much more chill than River Queen. She's gonna be awesome.
Could not have been more wrong. What?
I literally wanted to slap her when she was talking to Lydia.
She was so mean.
I was like, what is wrong with
evil,
you?
Like actual evil.
Yes.
Like, you know?
She says, my sons, you have seen them. Consider yourself Ogenis blessed indeed for that. Now you will resume your duties. And then the Ocean Queen says, you loathe me, the Ocean Queen said, as if delighted. Hate it.
She's literally Ursula.
Yes.
Literally, Christina, yes.
The blows that kept coming to Lydia... of like everything just happened.
She literally died.
And first she died.
Oh, right. First she died.
Then the sons. Then the Ocean Queen being like, all right, you saw them. Why aren't you thanking me? Ha ha. Gotta go back as the Hind. Oh my God. It was. And then from there, we get to this convo with Rune.
Oh God, y'all. This scene really pissed us off.
One of our hottest takes, I think.
Livid.
This scene, guys.
Livid.
Before he says the lines, though, they see each other and she like starts to open up to him, because at this point he's like being like trying to be supportive, like, or not being supportive, but he's like standing there at least, not saying anything, which is better than nothing.
The bar is on the ground.
And she's like, I haven't seen them since they are 18 months old, not even a picture. And I don't know, she's like, she says something to him and he responds with like, it's almost like you want me to resent you. And she's like, I wanted you to listen. Like she's referring back to the dungeons, but you wouldn't. Yet now that I have fit some sort of acceptably sad female backstory, you're willing to hear me out. And then he goes, that's bullshit. And she like cuts him off and she's like, would you have listened if I had no backstory other than realizing what was right and wanting to fight for it, of doing whatever it took to make sure that good prevailed against tyranny? Or does my being a mother somehow make my choices more palatable to you?
That
God, I
line.
Love that line.
Like, it's you so motherfucking good. Queen.
Yes.
Put him in his place.
I love this so much. And this is such an interesting thing for Sarah to do with Lydia's character. And I love that she pointed that out, that it's like, so because I'm a mother, you're going to feel sorry for me? Like, what if I didn't have the kids? What if I was just doing the right thing?
Yeah.
For no other reason than that.
And I'm happy we got her on page saying these things.
Me too.
I'm happy we got those two yeah. little chunks of dialogue, because they are incredible.
Yes.
However, Rune's reactions to these.
Rune's response is,
yeah.
Oh my God. This no. is, okay. I'm just going to read it and then we will react.
Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
So she finishes saying like, what does that, like my choices seem more palatable to you because I'm a mother. His response is, most dudes run when they find out the female they're into has kids. Her eyes flickered with cold fire. That's male strength for you. And then he responds, "You seem to like my strength plenty, sweetheart." Oh. Then he keeps going because he has to double down. He says, "So what's the sob story, Lydia?" And then she responds, "You don't deserve to hear it."
That's right.
Yeah, that's don't right. deserve
Are you
to
fucking
hear it.
Kidding me? The sweetheart?
The sweetheart
the
is...
The audacity.
Like Pollux. It's disgusting.
It's Pollux.
Yes, Christina. It is.
Oh,
it
you
is.
Seem to like my strength, sweetheart. Like,
ew.
It is that whole sense. Honestly, like, I know, like, what's the sob story is obviously terrible, but for some reason, the you seem to like my strength, sweetheart is, like, so icky to me.
So ick. And it's not Rune.
And it doesn't fit.
Also, the, like, well, most dudes would have run when they found out the girl they, like, has kids. Like, oh. I'm sorry, do you want a cookie?
Do you want a
gold star? Do you want a star on your chart, sir? Like, what the fuck do you want?
I feel like what feels so odd about it is she literally just died and he held vigil.
Yeah.
And then was like I, the last thing I said to her was I wish she was dead and like I need to like make this up to her, blah, blah, blah.
Nope.
And it's like, then he like turns around. I almost would have preferred, it still would have not have been a great response, but it would have been better for him to just like be in shock and be like, I don't know how to handle this. And not be able to say anything. And her being like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what? You can't handle this? You can't handle my truth? And her to be, and him to be like, no, this is too much. Like, even that would have been better.
So that to me, honestly, also would have fit.
That would have fit.
Like, it's a lot for me to handle because I'm a frat boy and I gotta go work out. Like,
yeah.
That would have been fine. It's just that instead of that, he was cruel.
He was cruel.
That's a great way to put it, Christina.
That was uncalled for.
And that just doesn't... Yes, he said that thing to Bryce. So, like, I guess it's not just completely out of left field, but it felt...
It feels different because this one's more on paper. And we're reading it. The other one's like a past story and Bryce and Rune have worked through their shit. This is like, we are halfway through the book and he said something really mean.
Yeah.
And how are we coming back from this? I mean, we do. We do come back. But
we
like,
do.
It was scary for a second
oh,
there.
Oh, he was teetering on some very thin ice with me.
Yeah. In my head, these lines just don't happen.
Yeah.
Because I don't want them to.
That's right.
And that's our prerogative.
I really enjoy what happens with them later, and I don't want to not enjoy it. So
agreed.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple things we're going to like just quickly summarize. The three fire sprites are on the ship, and Lydia and Bryce go to them, and they send them out to go find Irithis, the sprite queen. Apologize if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. And Bryce and Lydia have kind of like a sweet moment together where Bryce is like, hey, if you ever like need to talk, you know, I'm here, like to another girl. And Lydia's like, oh, okay. Like, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Lydia meets with her sons and gives them Rowan's ring.
Rowan's ring.
It's Rowan's ring.
The rupee.
And now it's like absolutely canon.
Oh, for sure.
Because I mean, now we know that Brandon of the Wildfire, right? Uh-huh. Like his name whatever. And we said this when she first notes the ruby ring.
Absolutely. We said it.
And she says it's a family heirloom.
It was just a really lovely topper on that cake. Really enjoyed that moment. I mean, you know, Ace was still a jerk.
Ace was awful. I will let it go. I will stop being mean about a 14-year-old boy, but he was being rude. okay. Anna.
Okay. So backtracking a little bit from that. Bryce, as we know, left the Autumn King and winnows where Hunt is, which is on the Depth Charger. And the Ocean Queen has arrived and she's in the middle of a meeting with like Tharion, Rune, Hunt, that whole crew, everybody. And basically she's like laying into Tharion because she's like, my sister wants you. The Viper Queen wants you. I want you. Like you're in trouble with everybody.
Yeah.
And then that's when Bryce like winnows and appears and she's like, actually.
The confidence.
She's like, I'm Bryce Dannon, queen of the Valbaran Fae. and Tharion belongs to me.
And yeah, I was like, did I miss something here?
Was this the marriage plot all over again?
Where you like don't talk about getting married, but you're married.
But you're married and now you're queen.
All of a sudden like locking your dad in the closet means you're the queen?
I was like, did we miss the coronation?
We missed it. It was off page. Yeah,
or like killing him or anything. Like he's still alive in the closet.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah,
it was,
for sure.
But it was fun in the moment. Yeah, it was.
It was fun in the moment. She shows up and like, oh, Hunt is the first time he's seen her. First time she's seen Hunt, and she's like, he lets out a strangled sob, and he's like, Bryce looked at him, scanning his face, the tears he couldn't stop. Her gaze flicked to the halo, then down to his wrist, but her expression yielded nothing. She just walked up to where he sat, and it was her fucking scent, and that was her soft skin brushing his hand as she peered down into his face. Hey, he said, voice rough, eyes stinging. Bryce squeezed his hand, tears filling her eyes as well. Hey, she said.
Oh,
Guys.
Guys.
I loved it. I loved
it. I loved
it. It's just like so cute.
So freaking cute.
I was dying for this reunion.
And then like Hunt jumps right into like stands up and he's like, yeah, what she said, she's my mate and she's the queen now. And he's like, and I'm Prince Hunt.
That's right.
Yeah.
At your service, my lady.
Anything she says, I will agree with.
And we love a supportive king.
We do love a supportive king.
And he is supportive as hell of her. I don't care what yes. anybody else says. He is
the most supportive.
He's king. Most supportive.
He wins most supportive in the book.
He is. Yeah. Bryce fills in everybody about what she learned in Prithian, about the parasites, about like Helena, the truth. She also tells everyone, like, hey, BT Dubs, like, the princes of hell are my buddies. We're going to, like, bring them with us to fight the Asteri. And everyone's kind of like, what? I don't know. And she's like, no, just trust me. And everyone's like, okay.
Sure. And she's like, also, can you take us to Avalon?
Yes, that's a big thing. She's like, I need to get to Avalon because that's where my, you know, daddy who's locked in a closet said that there's like a big library there that might have the answers, and also I need to like go explore the Cave of Princes right, or whatever right. for answers about the swords. And the Ocean Queen's like, okay, fine, I'll drop you off, but Therian has to stay here, which he obviously ignores later.
He says no shot to that.
Yeah, so that all happens, and then we just get the reunion times, because like the whole time yes. we were sitting in this meeting, I was like, I just need you and Hunt to hug. I need you in like room mm-hmm. to see each other. I need like some yep. physical like moments of contact.
Love it.
So we finally got those, thank God.
Oh, it was so good. It was so sweet.
Hunt's like, how did you find me? And she throws his words back in his face from the end of CC2, and she's like, you're my home, Hunt. Our love spans across stars and worlds, remember? I'll always find you.
Oh, it's just like, that is just...
They're so playful.
So playful. I love it.
That line, though. I forget how beautiful it is. And then her and Rune have the cutest...
Oh, my God. It's reunion. Freaking cute.
You could tell this was cute AF because I was mad at Rune and I still loved this.
Yo, I absolutely
was so mad
same.
At him. That's how same. Cute it was.
Oh, it was precious. It was just... And, like, everyone was like, what the fuck? What the hell? Like, you're here. Yeah. It was just so well done. So the way good. They, like, they're all, like, in a little cabin room together. Just, like...
I picture it like a cruise ship cabin.
Cruise ship,
so
like a
tiny.
Literally.
Yeah. And these, like, big, bulky guys.
Hunt's, like, under the bunk bed, like, in the corner. Like,
yeah, it's literally, like, under the bunk bed and, like, Bryce and Rune so and Hunt next to her. So they're all, like, sitting there.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Love it. It's so cute. They all kind of like catch each other up about like, where have you been? What have you been doing?
So yeah, in that, Bryce says to them, tell me everything that happened. Like, boys, tell me about the torture. What happened to you? But and they tell her and it's very upsetting for her, which like, I get it. So she's like, I need a minute. And she just like walks into the hallway.
Yeah.
So Hunt follows her, being sweet Hunt. But he's like, I'm fine. And she's like, well, what happened in the dungeons like wasn't fine. And he's like, well, I survived. And then he just goes, barely. And they like kind of like, and like puts his forehead on her forehead.
And he starts to apologize. He's like, I'm sorry. And she's like, for what? And he's like, for getting us into this mess. And she's like, you didn't do this. And he, the same thing he's been grappling with since CC2, he's like, I should have known better. Like, I should have tried to stop us. Like, I knew bad things would happen. And she's like, I'm going to stop you right there. She's like, do I regret the pain and suffering that you all went through? Soulless, yes. I can barely think about it. But do I regret that we took a stand, that we are taking a stand? No, never. And you couldn't have stopped me from starting that fight. I thought we were on the same page about doing what needs to be done. And he says, we were, pauses. And then he says, are. And she's like, you don't sound too sure of that. And he responds, you didn't have to see your friends carved apart. The seconds the words were out of his mouth, she knew from his wide eyes that he regretted them, but it didn't stop them from hurting, from pelting her heart like stones, from sending her anger boiling up within her. Then her response is, I had to live with the terror of possibly never getting home, never seeing you again, wondering if you were even alive every second I was gone.
I mean...
I don't like the game of, like, my suffering is worse than your suffering. However, that being said... You did not have to watch your brother, your like brother-in-law, his hand be bit off by one of your best friends.
Did you have to say two more bites to Baxiam?
That is the bar. It feels very dismissive.
Exactly.
Very and dismissive.
When he says the first thing and he regrets it and her reaction isn't to be like, no, don't regret that. I want you to share those things with me. It's to get angry with him. So then like when she says that like every second I was gone, after that, it says, she glanced at him sidelong in time to see something cold pass over his face. She hadn't seen that coldness in a long time, the face of the Umbra Mortis. His voice was chilled too, and he just says, good thing we both made it back then.
I mean, yeah, that's what I would do.
Of course he's going to shut down.
Of course.
He literally shared something with you and you were like, well, I'm going to top that.
I was worried.
But yeah, it's just strange for her to have missed him so much and like been so worried about him. And then like to hear about these terrible things that happened to him. And her reaction is to just tell him that actually it was worse for her.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was just... I didn't like
and
it.
And this is not the last time we will think that her behavior is...
No, we will not.
...uncalled for.
Okay. So moving on, we get to Avalyn and we get to meet Morven. It is not what anyone expected. It's kind of dark. It's kind of... I don't know. The place doesn't seem like what we expected Avalyn to be. It's all very backwards there. Females have no rights. He literally is like... looks at Bryce and is like, don't talk to me. Like, you're a woman. And Hunt's like, oop, wrong thing to say. What? You pissed her off now.
Yeah.
But, surprise, he has Flynn's sister, Sathya, and he's like, so I have your sister here basically hostage, and I'm going to make her marry one of my demon Demati twins, Seamus and Duncan, one of them. And she's kind of has a backbone about her. She's not like simpering or anything.
Yeah, I'm into it.
So the thing is, Morven's like, okay, well, women can't just be walking around. He says it would be unsafe for so many unwed females to be running around without a male relative or husband. And then Bryce is like, yeah, God knows what would happen if all of us females were left unsupervised. Absolute anarchy. Cities would crumble.
It's just like, really cannot.
So he's like, she has to get married. And I've chosen either one of my demon twins. And that's when Therion is like, well, I volunteer as tribute.
Yep.
I'll so do it. She doesn't have to marry one of them. I'll do it.
I don't have anything else going on.
Honestly, this is great for me because I can't go back in the water to anyone there. So if I could stay here for a reason, that'd be awesome.
Super.
And they literally get married like there.
Flynn is making his sister seem to be this like, I'm getting the impression that Sathya is very like Bryce in CC1 where she has this party girl like princess mentality.
Yes, for sure.
Or mask about her. But in reality, she became a very quick favorite character of mine.
Oh, we love her.
From what we've seen, Team Sathya, really enjoy her. Sathya. Honestly, it makes me judge Flynn, if anything, that she couldn't be herself around him. So.
Right, right.
We love an arranged marriage. I really enjoyed their dynamic, and I think we're going to have fun with it in the future.
Love it.
Okay, so from here, they go to the archives. Really nothing happens here besides Flynn's like, my magic hates this place, and they see a map, and there's like a bunch of islands that used to be there that aren't there.
Yes.
Yep.
So then we get Bryce and Hunt. Pretty much she's mean to him at dinner. There's only main thing here is Baxian's like really sweet, and he's like, be gentle with him, because I am a sweetheart.
Sweet Baxian.
Baxian's like, be careful with him, be gentle. Like, he did watch me bite Rune's hand off.
Yeah. So, it's weird I have to bring that up to you, Bryce. Like,
exactly. So Bryce then does kind of apologize in her own way. She's like, I wasn't trying to tell you how to feel. It is a good conversation.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It's not our like big thing later, but it's a good conversation.
It's sure. A starting point.
Yeah. It's a starting point. So from that conversation though, it starts the point where we get to the sexy times. So this is our first sexy times, okay?
Y'all, this was interesting.
I liked the beginning of this. We were getting a lot of like, look at you.
Yes.
A lot of like, you're so fucking beautiful. I'm like, yes, great, great, great.
Yep.
And then there was like a really sharp pivot into like space sci-fi intergalactic like sexy time, which it was jarring. But it was really when we got to the climax, for lack of a better word.
Yep.
It was like, I mean, guys, we were talking about rainbow nebulas. We were talking about stars and planets and clouds. And like, we were Neil deGrasse Tyson. We were having a Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, sexual encounter. So they climax in space so hard, pretty much, that their powers are now each other's powers.
They melded. Yeah. They became one in a biblical sense and in a spiritual, magical sense.
Don't ask us how it works.
Yeah.
Like, literally, Hunt's like, I felt you in me.
This did not make sense.
And, like, there's lightning on her and there's starlight in his hair and, like, it's all very interesting.
I guess it's because he's, like, a conduit. He was made, literally, we find out, to, like, help power her. So, like, somehow through their sex, this happen.
They've had sex before.
Yeah, but I will say in CC2, their sex, every time Bryce climaxes, she goes very spacey, but it's only like a sentence. This was like pages.
I don't think we've had nebulas before.
We have not entered nebula territory.
Yeah, so pretty much he's like, I feel made. And she's like, that's because you are now. Don't ask me how, but you are. So pretty much from here, we split up into Team Caves, Team Archives.
Yeah.
Team Caves.
Team Caves, go Team Caves, is Hunt, Bryce, Baxian, Therion, Sathya. Team Archives is Rune, Lydia, Deck, and Flynn.
I would personally rather be in the archives.
Ditto.
Yeah.
If we're choosing teams, I think we would all do really well in the archive setting personally.
We're really fast readers.
Yeah.
I am specifically very claustrophobic. So I cannot be in caves.
Physically can't go to team. I cannot physically be team caves. So
I like legitimately will be such a detriment to the team.
I would do nothing but hold you back. Truly.
But people would just have to talk me out of a panic attack the entire time.
This is like with Kim and the parapet.
Literally.
This would be my parapet.
Literally.
Like, you'd have to just be Christina's parapet. Just hit me with a rock and carry me through. Sedate. Like, truly, I can't do it. Okay, so team archives. So Lydia pretty much is, like, sassy back to Rune, finally.
Yes.
She says something about, like, Bryce doesn't need your help, and he's like, oh, yeah? And she's like, you're a prince. Start acting like one.
God,
it's fucking awesome.
That I love her.
And then there's a really great boys moment where then he's just being grumpy, and Deck's like, you're brooding. He's like, I'm not brooding. You're brooding. No, you're brooding. And they're just, like, going back and forth, like, brooding. No, you're brooding. And it's so good.
No, you are.
So then pretty much they really mysteriously disappear, Deck and Flynn. Don't know where they went.
It's giving Goblet of Fire tournament.
Yes!
When two characters disappear and you're I don't know where
they
went.
Why are they helping me with my gillyweed?
They have gone. Yeah.
My gillyweed.
But it takes them quite a while to realize.
Oh, yeah. I mean, far too long.
Yeah, but they're having sweet moments here and there. There's a few things. We don't have to get into all of them. But Rune finally gives us something. Gives us a little something. There have been, like, breaking down the walls moments leading up to this.
Yeah.
But pretty much he says, like, your path was difficult, Lydia, and, like, you did great. Good job, girl.
Well, and then we learn more about her backstory, and we learn that, like, she's very quick to be like, don't worry, Pollux is not their father.
Thank God.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is she says that they were conceived, and it sounds so... I know she's TOG Faye, but it sounds very similar to Calamari Party in ACOTAR.
It is exactly Calamari.
It's like, it's a fertility rite for, like, putting magic into the land.
Yep.
And she's like, it didn't matter what male it was. I don't know who it was, or I don't remember, but, like, I got pregnant.
Which, it's interesting that the rituals that we know are in ACOTAR, now we know are in TOG.
Right, yes, Christina,
And
yeah.
Then she talks about, like, how the Ocean Queen basically, like, let her in. She pretended to have been kidnapped by Ophion for basically 2 years. And then the Ocean Queen's like, okay, I will keep your children safe, but you have to go back and be a spy. And that was, like, the deal they made.
Hate her.
The worst.
But Lydia does it because she loves her children.
That's right.
And this is, I love this back and forth with Rune. She's like, I'm not wholly innocent, you see. Had it not been for my sons, I might very well have become the person the world believes me to be, forever ignoring that small voice whispering that it was wrong. And Rune says, it must have been so lonely. And she says, then you came along, this nearly inept, reckless agent. And you saw me. For the first time you saw me, I could talk to you as I hadn't spoken to anyone. You reminded me that I am alive. I hadn't felt that way in a very long time.
Oh, Lydia!
Lydia!
And then it's like, and then Rune, he puts his hand on her cheek, and he's just like, Lydia, finding out who you are, it fucked with my head. To know that you're the Hind, but also Lydia, also Day, my Day. But now I don't fucking care who you are, so long as you're mine. Because I'm yours, Day. I am fucking yours.
Rune!
Oh my God!
Rune Dannon!
Okay, and what transpires here made us all so humbled. We were like, well, Rune is the sweetest of angel boys that's ever lived. So this is why we hear no questions about those lines not happening.
That's right.
That's why FOF canon, he never says them,
y'all.
This part is so
good. I started crying.
Yeah.
It's the way she writes it, because you see Lydia, who has been, she's put on such a mask, she's been such a front, she's been so strong. And then she's standing in front of him and he's cupping her face. He says those lines I just read and she's trembling with, like, emotion. And she says, like, I couldn't stand it. Like, she's talking about him being in, like, watching him being tortured. And she's like, I couldn't stand it, she whispered, putting her mouth to his brow. I couldn't. She began shaking. He tightened his arms around her. I'm here, he said. We made it. She trembled harder, as if all that she had experienced and done were now breaking free in aftershocks. I'm here, he said again, and leaned down to kiss the side of her neck. I'm here, he kissed below her ear. Her hands came up, caressing a line down his back. She stopped shaking. I'm here, he said.
I can't. Wait, can you read the wrist kissing? The wrist kissing is my favorite.
Oh,
part.
God. Okay. So he's, like, kissing her and things start to get a little hot and heavy. She tries to, like, fill him up and she's like, he, like, stops her. He's like, uh-uh. Like, I'm worshiping you right now.
And as he should.
Like, yes, as you should.
As you should, Rune.
Get on your knees.
That's right.
So, oh God. Okay, so he like grabs her wrists in one hand and he pins them above her head, which like, hello, we love a little like, okay, oh, that's Rune. Hot.
I love it.
But she flinches. And it was barely more than a flicker, but he felt it. The slight tightening in her body, he halted, raised his head, looked down at her, at the hands he'd pinned. That fucker. Rune let go immediately. And then it's like he realizes Pollux was so rough with her. And he's like, he would kill him, blah, blah, blah. And she like starts to like shy away, like she's embarrassed. And she's like, it's just an old memory. And then he like looks at her. He took her wrists in one hand and gently pressed a kiss to each one, then laid them on her chest, hands over her heart, kissing her as he did so.
Something about that wrist kissing.
Why am I crying again?
It is so beautiful.
It's fucking gorgeous, y'all.
It's so beautiful.
And he says, like, just stay here with me. No sex. Just be here with me.
Oh, God.
Just be here with me. Sarah.
Like, are you kidding?
Are you kidding me?
It's like, how do we go from, like, I hate him. We're so mad.
Garbage trash.
And then you give us this moment, and he's like, I'm here. And he's kissing her
so
wrist.
Good.
I will never recover from the I'm here and the
never.
Wrist kissing.
Never.
Rune is
that
Rune
is Dan one and the Crown best. Prince of the Valbarian Fae.
Yep.
Oh, okay, y'all. Okay.
So, all right. So they finally, after all the sexy times, are like, wait, where's Flynn and Zach? Where are they? And then Rune puts it together. It's like, okay, I think they're probably in the caves. They took us. They're trying to lead us there. Let's go.
Yep.
So now we're going to like, we're going to rewind to Team Caves. So this is now backtracked to when we split up.
Yep.
They're in the cave. There's a lot that happens. We see a lot of things on the walls. None of them really pay off.
Yeah.
The main thing here is Sathya asks some very valid questions to Bryce. And it's like, what are you going to do, though, with all these important fae things? Like, are you going to, like, be our fae queen I've been wanting? Or are you just going to be like, fuck you guys? And she's like, oh, I'm going to be like, fuck you guys. And she's like, wait, but like, what about the rest of us? And she's like, well, they dug their grave. Okay. Cool.
We are bitter.
And then, oh, Baxian does say some sweet things.
Oh, yeah. Anna, do you have that? That's so sweet.
Oh, yeah. He's talking, like, he talks about, like, Danica, and he's like, you know, they're talking about her death, and he's like, make her death work count for something, Bryce. Like, don't make everything that she did, everything that she, like, led us to get here, don't make it be for nothing. Mm-hmm. And he says, she saw it in you, that you could, what you could mean for the Fae. She was good about seeing that kind of thing in people. And I feel like that's very introspective, like what she saw in him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Bryce is like, I'm so glad she had you to talk to. I really am. And then he says, I'm glad she had you too. I couldn't be there for her, couldn't leave Sandriel. And I'm so fucking grateful that she had someone there who loved her unconditionally.
What a sweet, sweetheart mate thing to say, you know, like that
he's so
just
wonderful,
like,
you guys.
He really is. And he's like, but he makes a point to also be like, you know, not all Fae are inherently bad, Bryce. Like, you saw what they could be when you went to Prithian, basically, is what he kind of like alludes to.
And she says that too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happens next?
Yeah. So the kings show up. Morvin and Autumn King are like, hey, surprise, we're here. We have Deccan Flynn. Murder twins have them a hostage. And they're like, noses are bleeding from like the mind fuckery. It's all very bad. So Bryce uses laser power that she now has to like cut the ceiling down and have a cave in with Deck and Flynn still on the other side, though. Like, to be clear, they're not on the safe side. And is like, jump in the river. And everyone's like, what?
Hold on.
And
Sorry,
she's
what
like,
are we doing?
What was it clear? I caused a cave in and I'm telling you to jump in the river. Just like, do
we
it.
We have to keep moving.
Yeah.
So they just all follow suit and jump in the river.
Yeah.
Hunt has the audacity to be like, hold on. Why did we do that?
Yeah.
Why didn't you talk to anyone about it?
Yeah.
And her response is, well, someone has to lead.
Mm-hmm.
This is in front of everybody.
Ooh, y'all, I didn't
and then
like this.
His temper flared. What the fuck does that mean? It means that I'm not letting my fear and guilt swallow me whole.
Ooh.
It means that I'm putting all that shit aside and focusing on what needs to be done.
Eesh.
And then he says, and I'm not. I'm here, aren't I? And she says, do you even want to be? Because
oh
it seems
God,
like your
Bryce.
Fear of the consequences outweighs your desire to feed the Asteri. And he says, it does. And he goes, it will be hard to enjoy freedom if we're dead.
Valid.
And then
valid.
He takes a breath, collects himself, and says, look, I'm sorry. I know this isn't the time to pick a fight. This whole thing might be a colossal fucking mistake. Might get everyone we know killed, but I'll go along with it. I have your back, I promise. She blinked and said, that's not good enough for me.
Bryce, with all due respect, take several seats.
And then she said, that like, isn't good enough for me that you'll just go along with it. And he said, well, get used to the feeling. And then it just keeps getting worse. She says, get over yourself, Umbra Mortis.
Bryce.
And do you know what the next line is? Therion saying, yeesh.
Exactly how I feel. Like, y'all, keep in mind, this is happening in front of everyone. Like, this is not a private fight that they're having. This is
mommy and daddy are having a fight in front of the children.
So I'm gonna let everybody here know, people on Patreon already know, but I'm gonna let everybody else know that at this point I was so aghast at this behavior that I convinced myself that the swords together were a horcrux and that she was literally being like fed mean thoughts because they were on her too long.
Yes.
And so she had to like
they were the power was warping her. Warping and it was too much power at once. And
that's
like,
what we thought.
And no.
Right.
That's not
it just seemed so out of character.
Mean.
It was also it was like it felt very immature, like a high school fight.
Get over yourself. What? Really, Bryce? Are we 16 years old? Get over yourself.
And then
you get over yourself, Bryce.
You, Bryce.
You.
He's allowed to be like, yeah, this is I have concerns. I'm questioning our journey.
Why is that not valid?
What? We're not Aelin and Rowan. That is not the book.
That's not, yeah.
No.
No one is suggesting that we hold hands and have a kumbaya moment, but we don't need to openly disrespect our mate and our husband and be so dismissive in front of everybody in our group and basically be like, get over yourself. Like, how dare you question me? Like, how dare you bring up valid points and concerns as someone who has lived through this twice now?
Twice.
And it just felt so
you would think
unlike
that there'd
her.
Be a little bit more of, okay, hun, I also don't want to die. I would like to enjoy this world that we're helping to save.
Yeah. Also, how actually mean to be like,
super
mean. The emotions she chooses to call it, like his fear and guilt, like those are so specifically personal.
So pointed.
And it's like, I'm not letting my fear and guilt get a hold of, like, I'm better than that. Fuck you, Bryce.
Yeah,
I was really upset about
this. I was really pissed.
I agree. Again, we thought she had a horcrux situation. We literally were like, this is not Bryce.
Because we were like, there's no way this can really be her.
Uh-huh.
Turns out it was.
Anyways.
So we have the fight. Then we end up in the tomb where Prince Pelias is. And there's like this whole thing that happens with like her starlight and it like the light lights up and it ends up like lighting up this area underneath the tomb. And she gets the idea of like, okay, I think there's, and actually Therion says like, what if it's not in this room? What if it's in a separate room? And that's when the light like shines underneath. And so she's like, okay, I think there's something under here. She pushes the sarcophagus over.
Well, this was
another reason we thought she had a horcrux, because we're like, this is an insane jump of logic, but fine.
Nothing about this made that she would know this, but whatever.
So she pushes the sarcophagus and there's a secret stairwell that leads us down to this room of bath salts. It's black salt. It's not bath salt.
Yeah, black salt.
But there's a bunch of salt things. Yeah. And pretty much there's like, if you drink this water from this pitcher, you get to like talk to hell.
But well, no, but before that, they learn a few more things. So, well, we learn a few more things.
Okay, sorry.
So Helena, I'm just going to summarize what we learn about Helena and Pelias.
Okay, great.
So everyone thought that like these caves were created by Pelias. No, they were created by Helena. Helena used like Pelias's like love of the patriarchy and like fuck women to like say like, hey honey, like why don't we build a shrine to you and like I'll like take charge of it because you know you're the man and I'll like hide your, I'll put your sword with you when you die. And he was like, yeah, that sounds great, honey.
Of course, I love it.
So she uses her starborn magic and basically she like mimics the caves that she grew up with in Prithian in the Dusk Court. Mm-hmm. And she and Celine have the same magic that they use to like create the caves and this whole network system. And then she hid the sword in like plain sight until a worthy successor could come to claim it. So then they drink the, like Christina says, they drink the salt bath water and they pass out. And in their dream state, Aedas shows up on like, I'm picturing like gondolas in Venice.
Yes. Me too.
Same.
Like, me too.
Yes.
And he's like, welcome! Hi, guys!
Welcome.
Seems you're a little lost, but I'm so happy you made it in time.
Yes.
Great to see ya.
So good you're here.
We've only been waiting centuries.
Yeah.
So we have another history lesson. Here's like the big gist of things. Mm-hmm. So Thea, as we know, divided her starlight up, right, at the big battle. What she did was it was actually her own power. It wasn't just like little glimpses. It was full on, she divided her power into thirds. A third went to Celine, a third went to Helena. And the third, her third, she took out of her body, so she was powerless, essentially, and put it into the Star Sword. And that's why she wanted Celine to take the dagger with her, because part of, if you have the swords together, she was worried that the Asteri would be able to use it. So she separated them. And he says, both weapons were keyed to her power thanks to Thea's assistance in their making. It was why the Star Swords called to the descendants of Helena of Thea, but only to those with enough of Thea's starlight to trigger its power. So that's why Bryce has been able to really use it, because she has like a direct line from Helena, and she has like Helena's power resurfaced.
Right.
Okay. Basically, what Helena does then is, then when Peleus dies, she waited for him to die, and because the power was in the sword, she like took part of her own power out and put it and hid it in the island somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so Bryce has Helena's power already. Now she has Celine's power, or the kernel that was Thea's in Celine's body.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now she just needs the third and final kernel of Thea's. And he's like, I don't know where it is, but it's somewhere in the island. You have to find it. And Bryce is like, cool, great. That's not helpful.
Yeah,
like,
great, thanks.
Like, what am I supposed to do with this? And so the other big thing is, he backs up what the Autumn King says, was like, if you use the two swords together with the star power, it should like create a portal, quote unquote, to nowhere.
Nowhere.
He says, though, but it will be like ultimate destruction, like kind of like that kill switch that Celine or Vesperus mentions in part one, that like if you do this, you run the threat of like destroying all of Midgard, not just the Asteri. And that's kind of like the big of it. And then you find out about Hunt's lineage.
Oh, God.
All right. They made the Thunderbirds and Hunt chargers for Bryce, hoping that someone from the lineage would exist. And they knew that she would need a charger. So they made Thunderbirds. Then the Asteri were like, no, we see you. We're going to kill those Thunderbirds. So then they all three came together to give parts of their essences to make him.
Y'all, this is so Virgin Mary.
Joseph, in this story, is this scientist from the Asteri archives. He wanted to marry Mary, his mom, and rise her up out of poverty. Anyways, so they were like, cool, let's use him. So then they, like, somehow put him in her. Doesn't really matter how. Point is, he's from all of them, and his lightning is actually Apollyon's hellfire, which would be super duper helpful because the hellfire can kill the Asteri, but Hunt's lightning can't because it's diluted. So don't get too excited there.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, they were like, you can free yourself anytime you want from that black crown, babe. Just like think about it. It'll be gone. So just like,
it's like positive vibes only. And it'll
like
bebop off.
No true son of hell can be caged. So just like whenever you want, it'll pop out.
Why couldn't you tell me that in the dungeons? Would have been nice.
That would have been the time.
Again, that tale that wasn't for now would have been nice for then.
Would have been nice for then.
But yeah, so pretty much, yeah, 23andMe is like all three of them are his dad instead of one, which is interesting. Yeah. And there is a like interesting foreshadowing there at the end of Aedas. Like they're going to leave. And he's like, hey, by the way, if there's a moment where you get to choose between like being together and being in love or one of you dying, like just choose each other and love.
I don't know. It's just weird because I'm like, did we not just spend three books getting to this point? And now you say, but choose love.
But choose love.
By the way, guys, I actually like just between us.
Just like, choose love. Choose,
between us, choose love. Like, I'm, and just go be happy.
I'm a big softie. So just like, you know, if you could love each other, that'd be cool.
I missed my opportunity.
Just
kind of so.
Like, why did you spend all these pages telling us about
like literally your entire MO, dude, has been training and opening the rift. So like this is different. But also I picture that as well on the gondola. Like he's like, hey, but before I leave, really quickly. Like as he's like, no one's looking,
like,
right?
This is so
I'm on the water. Hey.
Like he's love. Singing a love song and he's like, yeah, he's yeah, like, you little love.
Hey. That's amore.
That's amore.
Choose amore.
He's like whispering in between like the lines. He's like, but it's like, that's someone. But really, choose each other because I still miss Thea.
I know this goes against everything I've said, but actually just like, if it comes down to it, your love is more important than us. Choose amore.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
Woo! All right. So meanwhile, back in the caves, Morvan and the Autumn King have showed up, surrounded everyone with fire.
With fire.
In the middle of the circle and taken the swords from them.
Uh-oh.
So they wake up and they're like, oh wow, that was a crazy dream. To just like
shit.
All their friends ablaze.
Chaos.
Like in the middle of a ring of fire. And the murder twins are like a part of it somehow. I don't remember how. But Bryce literally melts
Y'all,
their minds,
this
guys.
Is crazy.
It's like literally there's like their eye holes are like smoking.
It's
like
so
it like
good.
Melts their whole mind. It's wild.
Love it.
It was awesome. And like then this is like the Autumn King is like with Morvan and he's, you know, she kind of confronts Morvan and she's like, do you not understand like who Hunt and I are? like, do you not know that we killed an two archangels between the two of us? And Morvin's like, no, your dear old dad forgot to mention that. Mm-hmm. You did what now?
I'm sorry, come again?
She's like, yeah, I'm not just a dumb female.
Yeah.
I have really cool powers.
I am Mori and Partaka. Yeah.
Oh, also Hunt has a great moment. So like, I think, you know, somebody's like, go help Bryce, like her, because the kings are about to attack her. And he's like, she doesn't need my help. And we're like, yeah.
It's so good. It's really good.
I freaking love it.
But yeah, so everything like builds up here to her going to kill Autumn King. Like builds up. And then the line we get, mm-hmm. she says, it wasn't Hunt's lightning that shone through the Autumn King's ribcage. It was the Star Sword. And it was Rune wielding it, standing behind him. Rune, who had driven the sword right through their father's cold heart.
Damn it, I love that.
Like, and then it gets even better, but
it's so good. And he was like,
it's so validating.
Kim, do you want to read it?
So he's like, he stabbed him through the ribs, right? And the Autumn King fell to the ground. And Rune's like, also, while I have you here, I lied about what the Oracle said to me. Because if we remember, he told his dad that the Oracle said that he was going to be a fair and just king. And the Autumn King was like, that's lame. And he was like, well, I lied. The Oracle didn't tell me that I would be a fair and just king. She told me that the royal bloodline would end with me. I thought it meant your bloodline. And then he says, I was wrong. I think the Oracle meant all of them. The male lines, the starborn princes included, all you fucks who have corrupted and stolen and never once apologized for it, the entire system, this bullshit of crowns and inheritance. And then his dad, this is like all mind speak, and his dad is like, you're a spoiled, ungrateful brat who never deserved to carry my crown. And he said, I don't want it, and like shut the bridge down, which is very like, shun in the office. Yeah. Like, shun, re-shun.
Shun.
Yeah. And he's like, the line will end with me, you fucking prick, because I yield my crown, my title to the queen. I always assumed the Oracle's prophecy meant that I would die. But I am going to live, he said to his father, and I am going to live well without you. And then he slices his dad's head off.
I love that, like, decapitation is like, all right, okay,
they're dead. Yeah.
It's like, well, listen, how else are you going to be sure
that's
the dead?
Only way we know someone stays dead? It's the only safe way. But no, I'm going to live well. I feel like that was just like
so needed.
So needed for him. I just loved it.
After like everything his dad put him through, for him to get to say like, totally. Because they always say like the best revenge is just like living well.
Yes.
And it's like, I love that he got to say that to him. It's like, I'm going to live and live well without you piece of shit. Love it.
It's so good. So then we have Morvin is still there.
Other
piece of shit. And he's like, this is normie. Like, I'm just going to like go over here.
And you're like back up into the shadows.
So, but Bryce is like, she looks at him and she said she found only hate. She says, if we win, this new world will be a fair one. No more hierarchies and bullshit. But right now, I'm queen of the Valbarian Fae and of Avalyn. And he gets, you'll be queen of Avalyn over my dead. And then she cuts him off. As I was saying, for the moment, I'm queen. I'm judge, jury, and I'm your motherfucking executioner. And she's like, she takes the truth telling. She doesn't take the sword, BT Dubs. She takes the dagger.
And it says
it was a matter of a few strokes of truth teller through Morvin's neck before he was beheaded. And as she rose to her feet, it was a fey queen who stood before Rune, wreathed in starlight, unflinching before her enemies. From the love shining on Athalar's face as he beheld Bryce, Rune knew the angel saw it as well.
Oh. The love on his face!
Do you have where they're kneeling and Rune?
So then, you know, everyone's recovering from the things. And then it says, but it was Sathya who approached Bryce, who knelt at her feet, bowing her head, and declared, hail Bryce, queen of the Midgardian Fae. And Deck and Flynn knelt too, and Rune turned to his sister and knelt as well, offering up the Star Sword with both hands. To right an old wrong, Rune said, and on behalf of all the Starborn princes before me, this is yours.
God, that's freaking beautiful.
A beautiful moment.
To right an old wrong? Oh, God, I loved it. I ate it up.
I loved that whole scene. I thought it was so well done. It was so rewarding. Everyone said what they needed to say.
My favorite thing to happen in the caves, I think.
God, by far.
By far. Far and away.
All the caves.
Honestly, all the caves.
That was it. That was my fave.
I mean, and we've been in quite a few cave systems in this
book. We've spelunked twice now.
You spent quite a bit of time, and this was easily the best thing.
So, okay, I'm going to recap this really quickly. Pretty much then Hunt's like, we need to find Thea's other piece of light. And Therian's like, anyone got any bright ideas? Which somehow makes her make the leap of like, bright, light it up. Oh, that means I should put these swords in the holes of the eight-pointed star. So she does. And they're like little divots that are the exact size of the sword and the dagger.
Yeah.
So she puts those in those puzzle pieces. And as she does, she gets that Thea magic. That's what she had to do. And it's like...
unlocking a key.
Yeah.
Thea's magic. Yes,
she gets the magic. And we literally have... guys, there's really no other way to describe it. If you've seen the movie Moana, we have a Moana moment. She literally Moana's Avalyn.
Yep.
Like, the dead island comes alive and looks beautiful.
Oh my God, you guys.
I would bet thousands of dollars that when she was writing this, her son was into Moana. Because there is no way that you are not thinking that island was Moana.
You can't tell me this wasn't her inspiration.
She literally says, like, you're free.
She says it to the land. You're free, Bryce whispered to Avalyn, to the land and the pure inherent magic. Be free. And it was. Okay, here's...
and it was.
Here's one of our favorite parts. Sathy and Flynn laughed, and both siblings knelt, putting their fingers in the grass. An oak burst from Flynn's hand, shooting high over them, and from Sathia's hands tumbled runners of strawberries and brambles of blackberry, tangles of raspberries, and thickets of blueberries.
We have all the berries?
All of them. All the berries are present.
Every single berry. And you know, to her credit, I didn't even think a thicket.
No, bramble.
Thicket.
Runners, brambles, runners. Tangles, thickets.
I loved this, though. It was very joyous. We needed the joy.
It was lovely.
Also, I was pissed that Evelyn sucked. I was like, this is supposed to be the most beautiful place. And there was like not a pretty, I thought it was going to be a pretty island. And now it's a pretty island.
It's beautiful.
And like the magic was warping it. The magic was what was making it die.
Right.
Oh my God. Also, does that mean that now... back in Prithian, the prison island's gonna be, like, totally different? Because that magic's gone.
That's what someone brought up, like, oh, I wonder if that's, like, translating over. I think they bring it up, like, oh, I wonder if this will happen to, like, the other areas, too, and I think it will.
I think it's gonna be gorgeous now.
Maybe beautiful flowers for a special someone.
Kimberlyn! That's exactly what's gonna happen!
Flowers.
Elaine and the flowers! Oh, love it, love it, love it.
There's a really sweet moment between, sorry, I know we're wrapping this up, but like, there's a really sweet moment between Bryce and Rune, and they like,
yes.
They're like, everyone's there, and like, Rune was there, and they're both sobbing, so they're holding each other, and Rune pulled back, cupping her face in his hands. Tears ran down his face. She couldn't stop crying and laughing with all that flowed from her heart. Her brother only pressed a kiss to her brow and said, long live the queen.
Stop it.
That is so good.
I
love them so much. Like, I love their relationship.
Oh,
I really
tugs
love
of a heartstring.
And this is like finally when we get a really good conversation with Hunt and Bryce.
They do. Yeah, they have a really good convo. And
Bryce hears him finally.
She says, Hunt, I get it.
He's like, he's very concerned about his heritage.
Which is very valid.
Very valid. And she really listens to him. And she's like, I know, if you need to talk, if you need someone to listen, I'm here.
Which like shouldn't need to be said, but it's important that we
know what we'll take what we can get.
Yes.
And part two basically ends there. The last thing we see is they finally get cell phone reception. And Declan says, like, he announces to everybody that the human district was attacked.
Yeah.
And that's where we leave off.
And so now their timelines are caught up.
Yes. Yeah. Now they're all kind of, they're about to
converge.
Part three.
Ooh, y'all, part three. Woo!
There's a lot.
Okay, so that wraps up part two. Friends, thanks for hanging with us. This was a long one. There was a lot to cover.
Yes.
But there were some really, really fun moments. We can't wait to discuss part three. That should be coming very soon. We will wrap this book up, which is so bittersweet.
Ugh.
But like we've talked about in every episode, we have chapter chats up on Patreon if you want to hear more of like our chapter by chapter thoughts as we read this book. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at Flights of Fantasy Podcast and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next time, cheers and happy reading.
Cheers, listeners.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.